We're doing the Netivot Shalom and Parshat Vayetze. And the topic is Nachala B'li Metzarim. So the Pasuk says, Vayazarcha kafar ha'artzufa al-tzta yama v'kidma v'tzafona v'negba. Your seed will be like the earth of the ground, and you will expand to the south, to the east, to the west, to the north, to the south. Matzino b'chazal b'inyan avtacha zo, sh'neimcha li'Yaakov. With regard to this promise that you will expand in every direction, our sages say, she nachala b'li metzarim. You will have a portion without limits. That's what Chazal say. You see, Hashem tells them you'll just keep expanding in every direction. V'chidita b'gmara, the Talmud tells us at the end of Tractate Shabbos, kol ha'manegta Shabbat, notni lo nachala b'li metzarim. Whoever enjoys Shabbos, has a good steak, a good chulin, a good nap. Whoever enjoys Shabbos the way he should, will get a portion without limits. Shenemar, as the verse says, im tashiv mishabbat raglecha v'gomer, az titanag Hashem v'ayihir kavtich al v'amte aretz v'achatich nachlat Yaakov avicha. It says, the pasuk we're quoting now?
Yeah.
No, it's from the Navi Isaiah. In Yeshaya it says, if you let your legs rest on Shabbos, if you withhold yourself from going great distances and have pleasure on Shabbos, you have pleasure with Hashem, so I will give you the heights of the land, and I will feed you the portion of Jacob, your forefather. So the Talmud says, why does it say, if you enjoy Shabbos, you will have the portion of Jacob? To stress, lo kava mitzrak shaita nachlatam b'mitzar v'gvul, not like Abraham and Isaac, whose portion had limits, had boundaries, uchmosh katuv b'Avraham, as it says in Abraham, kumi terech v'aras lokal rochva kilachat ninat. God tells Abraham, walk the land within its boundaries, to the width and length. So it seems to say, within the boundaries, you'll receive those boundaries of Israel. V'lo chitzrak shekatuv bo kilachat zachat en kol ha'arzot ha'el. To Isaac, God says, these lands will be given to you and your seed. So God's talking about these lands, within confines. But rather, like Jacob, where God tells Jacob in our parsha, your seed will be like the earth of the land, you will expand in every direction. Yaakov was told he will get a portion that has no limits. So we have to understand, why was it specifically Yaakov that merited to have a portion without limits? It wasn't Abraham or Isaac. We also have to understand, why is it such a big deal to enjoy Shabbos? That we say, you enjoy the Shabbos, and you'll get such a great lot. Why? What's the big deal? We don't find when it comes to other mitzvot that it says you'll get such a great portion. It doesn't say you watch your peyos, not to cut your peyos, you'll get a portion without limits. Don't shave with a razor, you'll get a portion without limits. It doesn't say that. Daven every morning and every night. Say Kriya Shema every morning and every night. It doesn't say that.
It says respect to parents and you get reward.
Yeah, but not like this. It doesn't say this. ויש לבר העניין על פי מה שביארנו שיסוד מידתו של יעקב היא קידוש כל העניינים גשמים עד להיותם חלק התורה. We can explain based on the concept that the Netivot Shalom has already explained that the essence, the foundation of Yaakov's trait is the capacity to take the physical world and sanctify it. To be able to take everything you live with in this physical world, to take the seemingly mundane and make it a part of Torah. And as the holy grandfather of Lechovitz said, שמפרשת ויצא פרשתו של יעקב אבינו אנו למדין איך שיעקב אבינו הרים את כל ענייניו ועסקיו הגשמיים למדרגה גבוהה כל כך. From our parsha, Parshas Vayetze, which is the story of Yaakov, from the story of Yaakov, we learn how Yaakov was able to take everything he dealt with in life, everything physical he dealt with in life, and raise it to such a high level, to a point where the Torah describes how he carves out the wood he puts in the trough for the animals to drink. Why? Because when Yaakov does everything on such a high level, even the mundane becomes Torah. And based on this concept, we explained the idea that Yaakov was shown a ladder. He has a dream. In his dream, he sees a ladder. The ladder is from the earth to the heavens. He was given an illusion. He was being told all the physical, all the mundane, all the things that seemingly are the things that are necessary for the body, for the physical life. Shem b'chinat mutzav arza. That's why the Torah stresses the ladder was stuck in the ground to stress the physical, the earthly needs. Shayachim lechor al arziyut. At first glance, you say that's all earthly, that's all mundane. Ach v'rosho magia shamayma. But the stress of the dream was that the top of the ladder hits the heavens. Biyicholto leagbia zot madrigot agvot biyoter b'avodat Hashem. Yaakov has within his capacity to take the mundane, to take the simple and the ordinary, and uplift it to the point where it's all a part of his service of Hashem. And he sees in his vision this ladder that connects the mundane with the holy, and the angels are going up and down. He's being told, the righteous, when they go up the ladder, well, it's contingent on that. Can you take the ordinary and lift it? How much does the top reach the heaven? Through that, their actions rise. Through that, their actions are great. I want to tell you two fantastic stories. Shabbos, there was a siren. So, we don't know what's happening. We even heard the boom. So we heard the missile hit. And the kids are sitting at home. I'm in shul. And we suddenly find out that we're in danger. We're within range of the missiles. So the kids all panic. They heard the siren. They heard the explosion. And they ask their mother what's going on. Their mother says, you don't have to worry. Hashem is watching over us. You don't have to worry. So I come home. We see that the miklat is locked. They haven't unlocked it. So I told my wife, I'm going to go to the head of the yeshuv to get the key to the miklat. And I'll take the two little ones. They didn't go with me to shul. We'll give them a nice trip to go and get the key. For them, that's a big deal. Right? So I'm taking two little kids. And we're walking. And the little girl, Tzipora, looks up at me and says, Abba, could you call Hashem on your phone? So I'm standing there wondering what she's saying, and her brother Shlomo turns to her and says, of course Abba can't call Hashem on his phone. He doesn't have the number. So I'm listening to this conversation. I said, Tzipora, why do you want me to call Hashem on the phone? So she said, well, Ima said that Hashem is watching over us. But that's not true, because it's Shabbos, and in Gan I learned that on Shabbos Hashem sleeps. So I need you to wake him up. Could you give him a call? So she learned that Hashem created the world in 6 days and rests on Shabbos. So to her, that's very simple. Hashem's sleeping. And if Ima's saying we have nothing to worry about because Hashem is watching us, so do me a favor, just give him a call. Make sure he's up. So, that's story number one. And story number two, there's a very pious family in our yeshuv, people who I really admire. And we were standing and talking, and one of the kids came and started nagging the parent, and the parent couldn't talk, and eventually the parent told the kid, look, I'm not going to be able to talk to you right now. I'm talking to someone else, and whatever, the conversation ended. 2 minutes later, someone who was standing nearby commented to me, said to me, you know, I always looked at them, and I thought they're such holy people. And here I see that they also have to deal with the nagging kids, and they're dealing with life the same way I have to deal with life. So I said to him, you know, that doesn't take away from their holiness. They're still holy people. Holy people are people who deal with the mundane and uplift it. If I look at the conversation with Tzipora on Shabbos, that's fantastic. She, in her mind, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. If I'm supposed to trust in Hashem, so give him a call, wake him up, make sure he's watching. I mean, she just put one and one together. He's supposed to be watching. He's asleep. Give him a call, right? But, okay, so on a child's level, that's perfect for her level. On our level, we have to realize that being holy, and that's the point he's saying here, isn't the way people sometimes imagine someone who's totally detached from the world. What Tzipora did was holiness. It's taking every concept she has, putting it together, and making that part of her connection to Hashem. Nothing wrong with that. From her perspective, that's perfect. But from our perspective, so we're supposed to have a deeper understanding, right? But that doesn't take us away from dealing with the mundane. Every holy person dealt, and that's part of what the Torah teaches us. Yitzchak's digging wells, Avram's digging wells, Avram's dealing with Arab with filthy feet. That the Torah tells us holiness is about dealing with the world, dealing with it in a holy way. And that's the phenomenal concept that Yaakov is being taught. This ladder has its feet in the ground, its head in the heavens. Don't think that being holy is only with your head in the clouds. Being holy is being with your feet stuck in the ground, taking the mundane, dealing with the mundane, and uplifting it. And this is what Yaakov was being shown in this vision. His service was to take things that aren't a mitzvah and transform them into a mitzvah. Things that are permissible, uplift them. We know one level of holiness. That's that you don't go as far as you're allowed to. Meaning, a person's allowed to eat as much as he wants, right? You can have 15 steaks. That's not prohibited. But you say, no, I'll eat only 14. Okay, so maybe not 14. I won't eat two. I'll eat one. When a person takes what's permissible to him and says, I'm going to take a step back. I'm not going to have my full. Even though I could. But that's not enough. What he was being taught here is that holiness is not only about having that self-control, not going to the limit, but rather, but to take the mundane and uplift it to the point where the top reaches the heaven, and that's as is written in the book Mesilat Yesharim, Shesh Bet Madrigot, Tara Vekdusha. The Mesilat Yesharim, Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Letzato writes, there are two stages. One is called purity, one is called holiness. Tara, Hishlilat Tum'ah. Holiness, the word Tahor in Hebrew, means the negation of. Tahor really doesn't mean holiness, purity. It means the negation of, meaning if we have to draw it on a graph, we have minus one, that's defilement. We have zero, that's purity. We have plus one, that's holiness. Three levels. But the purity isn't a level unto itself, it's just the removal of the minus one. You're no longer defiled, so you're pure. When a person purifies himself, ensures he doesn't get defiled, that's tahara. V'lemala mizeh, but a step above that is madrigat kadosh, is the level of holiness. Shemaleh et kol inyanav hagashmim lirtzon Hashem, that he uplifts all his physical needs to the will of Hashem. V'az ni'imem kishim v'chekorban, and then the mundane that you do is like a sacrifice. Shu atzmo nepach liot kemizbeach uchem kadosh. He is like an altar. Just like on an altar, you take an animal. That's a pretty mundane thing. Yeah, but you can uplift it as a sacrifice to Hashem. So too, a person can take his mundane actions and uplift them. Achilato kachilat korban. When a person eats, if his intentions are correct, he can uplift the eating. Suddenly, he's not just gobbling down supper. He is thinking, I have responsibilities in this world. I have to live up to those responsibilities. I am eating so that I can do that. Just that thought, you're doing the same action. But when you think differently, suddenly the food has a different role in your life. And then everything, all his bodily needs are like sacrifices. They're like an offering that gives off good smell before Hashem. And that's the trait of Yaakov. And that's why Yaakov is called the Holy One. In all his actions he was holy. What does the Pasuk tell us about Yaakov? When he had Reuven, he said, Reishit Oni. He's my first strength. Chazal say that was a euphemism. That means he never spilt his seed. Yaakov says, I'm 60 years old, never lost a drop. The first drop was Reuven. Kochiv Reishit Oni. So you see, it's extraordinary, right? We don't find anyone else in Tanakh saying that. But that's the extraordinary holiness of Yaakov. Vayikatz Yaakov mishnato vayomar. So Yaakov, it says, awakens from his sleep and says, Achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh v'anochi lo yadati. Boy, I didn't realize. This is a place where God is present. She'ad ata b'chol yudal da'shanim she'ya b'vet ever. For 14 years, he was in the academy of Eiver, Shamasak Rak B'Torah V'Avodah. Over there, he was focused on learning Torah and on the service of Hashem. Lo yada she'efshar la'alot yam te'inyanim gashmiim la'avodat Hashem yitbarach. But there, his life was an ascetic life. He thought service of Hashem means I am separate from this world. He didn't realize there was this concept where you could take this world and uplift it. Rak b'rotot ta'chalom, only when he sees the dream, nitgala lo she'achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, then he realized, hey, here, out of the academy, I'm not living that ascetic life anymore. I've just left the academy. I had a good night's sleep for the first time in 14 years. And I'm dreaming and God's appearing and showing me you can connect the two worlds. It's not either holiness or the mundane. It's take the mundane and make it holy. And based on this, he also explained what it says. Yaakov lifted his feet and went to the east. Why does it say he lifted his feet? Could have just said he went. It says he uplifted his feet. The word regel means foot. But regel is also the bottom part of the body. If you look at the body, there's a Kabbalistic concept which is sort of obvious if you think about it for a minute, and that is that things get more sophisticated as you go up the body, things get more animalistic as you go down the body. The upper half of the body, you have the heart, you have the lungs, you have the brain, you have things that are, you could say, more easily understandable that they're holy. You go down the body, you get to the parts that are more physical, your feet carry you until you get to the bottom of the foot where you have very little feeling. Whereas on your tongue, you could feel two hairs. On the calf of your foot, you could barely feel if there's a hair altogether. So the foot, the idea that he uplifted his feet, is the idea that he was taught that the most mundane can be uplifted. So he got the message of the dream and said, okay, the dream showed me that connection, that I can uplift the physical. I don't have to be an ascetic in order to be holy. Now we could go to the east. With that idea, he said, okay, I can be anywhere. שרי בכל מקום ובכל הפעולות יכולים לעשות רצון השם בבחינת ראשו מגיע השמיימה. Wherever a person's at, he could do the will of Hashem. If his head is in the heavens. וזהו עניין כל הפרשה של יעקב. And that's the idea of the story of Yaakov. איך שהרים את כל ענייניו להיות כקורבנות. That he was able to uplift his regular life, to be a holy life. ולפיכך זכה יעקב לנחלה בלי מצרים. And that's why Yaakov merits an inheritance without borders. Because he was able to expand holiness without borders too. Holiness was not only about what's a mitzvah, but even the things that are mundane can be included. Let's just finish the paragraph in one second. Shegam ha'eter asa mitzvah shlo zo bilvad shenatan tahor mitame ela herim zot lemadriga kadosh. Being that he expanded holiness without limits, that in everything he did he was able to uplift it to the level of holiness, that's why he merited that he would get a portion without limits. And in a second we're going to see that that's the idea of Shabbos too. Yes?
So how come if he was so holy, his kids were not so holy?
His kids were not so holy.
They sold their youngest son and they did a little shtuah. If their father was the most holy person in the world, ever, I think they'd come out a little more holy than selling their brother and trying to kill him.
You see this, the same thing with Shmuel, Shmuel's sons. Shmuel was the most holy person in Israel. He was the prophet and he was the Nazir who grew up in the Mishkan. But his sons, were corrupt judges who took bribes.
And first of all, you could do a lot worse than those sons. Let's not say that they were.
Yeah,
you know,
also they made Shemayim.
Right. I mean, the two part question. One is how come the father, a parent on a great level, has kids that sometimes aren't great. I don't know how that answer. But the other question is a big assumption that there was something wrong with these 12 tribes, these patriarchy of the tribes. They did something with Yosef that was clearly misguided, but I wouldn't go so far as to say that was an evil act. I don't know.
They believe they're doing it for the sake of heaven.
Right.
They really believe it was supposed to be
good. Wait, what have I answered? Are you saying?
I think that we have to defer the question to next week's parsha, where we'll learn about the sale of Yosef, and there we will see that there was much more going on there than meets the eye. There are about, I don't know, 6, 8 different approaches among the Rishonim, among the early commentators, that when you look at the verses, they stem straight from the verse. The first one being that the brothers didn't even sell Yosef. If you look closely at the verse, it doesn't say they were the ones to sell Yosef, just for the record. I'm saying your assumption that they sold Yosef is correct, but I'm just saying, realize that it's an assumption. If you look at the verse, it says, Vayavru anashim midyanim socharim, Midianite merchants passed, Vayimshechu vayalu et Yosef minabo. They lifted and they pulled Yosef out of the bore, or out of the pit. Who lifted him? Doesn't say who. And they sold Yosef to the Yishmaelites for 20 coins. Who sold him? Doesn't say the brothers sold him. Just for as a first thought. I'm not even going the roots that they're saying, which happen to be correct too. I'm just saying there's much more than meets the eye in the story of Yosef. It deserves a much broader class. I mean, we'll have that Bezrat Hashem next week, Wednesday, in our Parsha class. If you're curious, you could go to last year's class. Every year we go through a few shitot, a few different ways of understanding the story. But even if we go with the simplistic approach, and we say the brothers sold him, and the brothers were wrong in selling him, there's more to the story, and I'm not sure that their error in selling Yosef, I'm not sure I would say that was a fault in their holiness. Out of holiness, a person can do a lot of things. Holiness is one question. One thing that should bother us, even if we just learn Rashi, without going to greater depth, we see that Hashem was on their side, on the brother's side. Meaning Hashem didn't tell Yaakov what was going on. And if you learn Rashi, so Rashi says Hashem joined with them in their ban that no one should reveal what was going on. So why is Hashem joining with them if they're so wrong? So yes, on the surface, they were dead wrong in what they did. And when you read the prophet, it seems very clear that they were wrong with what they did. The prophet seems to hold it against the Jewish people. It was a stain on our record for centuries, for millennium. But you still have to say there's more than meets the eye, because what's going on here? Why doesn't God tell Yaakov what's going on? Yaakov is kept in the dark for 22 years. So Chazal tell us, and Chazal say that Hashem joined in the ban not to reveal what happened. So there's a lot to be discussed. I'm not saying they were right in what they did, even though even in that, it's not so clear they were wrong. You see, Hashem joined them. I'm just saying I'm not sure that they're doing that wrong is indicative that they weren't holy.
One simpler question with that. It seemed to imply when they said that Yaakov, you know, was par excellence, you know, sanctifying the physical, but it wasn't something that, like, didn't Abraham also do that? Wasn't that part of his mission? I mean, whether it was, in his dealings with other people, and his eating, his drinking, and his hospitality, it was not the animal way of doing things, you know. I mean, it seemed that, you know, judging by what you were saying there, it seemed like Yaakov was like revolutionary in that concept. And, you know, growing up with Abraham and Yitzhak, I mean, didn't they have that element also of bringing Kedusha into the physical?
I don't know. One of the things that always bothered me was, why doesn't Avram sit and eat with his guests?
Because he's serving them.
Maybe. I hear, but it doesn't say that he ate with them. Even in the story of Vayera, it says V'umed alehem, he's standing there serving them. I don't know, if I were a guest by someone, I'd want him to eat with me. That I always wondered about that. There's a medrash that addresses that, but according the direction that the Ntivot Shalom seems to be taking is that until Yaakov Avinu, the concept was there are two separate worlds. I could serve him food and I'm doing a mitzvah, but for me to eat the food and do a mitzvah, that seems, he's saying, is a concept that Yaakov was taught with the vision of the ladder. Meaning until Yaakov, there were two separate worlds. You want to be holy? Okay, doing kindness to others, that's fine. But for you to eat and for that to be holy, that seems to be the direction he's developing. Yeah?
The idea, you know, which is sort of almost common in the non-Jewish world, you know, to be an ecstatic, to go up on some mountain, and that certainly didn't seem like Abraham.
Right? But we don't know if when Avram was being holy, called that, or prophetic, maybe that was what he was doing.
Okay. Right.
Saying that's the direction he seems to be taking. Going in line with what he's saying. I have to be true to the text. If you'd ask me, do I think other commentaries learn like the Nativot Shalom? I don't think so. But is that what he's saying? Yes, I think that's what he's saying.
Challenge you. It's not the vision that I had of the other picture.
So this is the concept that when one makes Shabbos joyful, pleasurable, so then he gets a portion without limits. It doesn't say one who takes pleasure in Shabbos. It doesn't say take pleasures for yourself on the Holy Shabbos. One who pleasures the Shabbos, Sheperusho, the explanation is, Al derech dita b'zohar kadosh, the way it says in the Holy Zohar. Shabbat, okay, now don't blame me if I don't know what I'm talking about. Shabbat, ihu yoma denishmita. Shabbos is a day of the soul. Velav yoma deguf haklal. It's not a day of the body at all. Shemuser b'shabbat kodesh et kol tanugei haguf lanshama lechelek eloka mimal. The pleasures of Shabbos are focused on the soul, the part that's within us, that's from above. And with that, he broadens the boundaries of holiness. What we're doing on Shabbos is we're crossing boundaries. Ordinarily, we say, my body enjoys the food. My soul, well, can enjoy some learning. It can enjoy davening. It can enjoy an inspiring tefillah. Okay. What do we do on Shabbos? When we're eating, we're supposed to be feeding our soul. We're taking the physical and we're using it as a way of nourishing the soul, the spiritual. And being that we're breaking the boundaries, we're breaking that boundary between the physical and the spiritual world on Shabbos, so a person gets a portion without limits. And here, I'll challenge you. I wonder if you'll remember till Shabbos. Try on Shabbos, eat everything the way you'd eat it, but take one spoonful of soup, take one spoonful of cholent, and tell yourself, I'm not eating this because I'm hungry, I'm not eating this because I want to, I'm eating this in honor of Shabbos. Stop, think for one spoonful, and then ask yourself how that spoonful tasted compared to every other spoon. Everything else, eat the way you want. Choose one spoonful, one piece of kugel. Try it. See what it tastes like. V'abiyur madua ne'emar inyan zeh davka b'shabbat kodesh. So why is this concept said specifically regarding the Holy Shabbos? Harei lechor hazeh sheyach b'chol inyanim sheyudim usher l'Hashem itbarach. Isn't this applicable to everything we do? Yesh lever al pi ma'ar maran ha'kadosh mekuvrin. We could explain it based on what the Holy Grandfather of Kuvrin said al ha'pasuk, based on the verse that says, U'shmartem et ha'shabbat ki kodesh hi lachem. Watch the Shabbos, for it is holy to you. B'Shabbat Kodesh Yishkoach HaKadusha Lekadesh Et Kol Inyanei Lachem. The holiness of Shabbos has the capacity to give holiness in everything that is otherwise self-centered. There are a lot of things that I do for me, but on Shabbos I have the capacity to uplift those things. Ha'inyanim HaGashmiim Shegam Hem Yiyu Kodesh. We can take those physical things, make them holy. V'ayinu shebechol ha'shavua en yudi yachol la'alot et ha'inyanim ha'gashmim le'madriga zokim le'dargat tahor. The rest of the week, the best you could do is be pure. I'm not defiled. I'm eating kosher. I'm doing what I can. V'rak b'shabbat kodesh yesh et ha'madriga shel kadosh. Only on the holy Shabbos can one uplift it to the level of holiness. Kedichtiv, as the verse says, u'shmartem et ha'shabbat ki kodesh hi lachem. Watch the Shabbos, for it is holy to you. Sheba Shabbat Kol Kodesh. On Shabbos, everything could be holy. Velachen davka b'Shabbat Kodesh ne'emar shnotin lo nachla b'li mitzrayim. That's why the Shabbos corresponds to Yaakov Avinu, where one can get a portion without limits. Do you guys ever notice that the shower for Shabbos is the different than the Shabbos than the shower Thursday night or Wednesday night? And it could be a shorter shower. It could be a, Shabbos has its own aura. And with this concept, we could explain the verse, your seed will be like the earth of the ground. You should try going to mikvah. You will expand to the west, to the east, to the north, to the south. What is he saying? Your seed will be like the earth. When we say earth, we're saying the lowest thing. It's as though it's non-existent. Avram wants to say, I'm nothing next to you, Hashem. What does he say? I am like dust and ash. So Hashem tells Yaakov in our parsha, your seed will be like the dust on the ground. There's a problem with this concept that he's telling us. You say to yourself, but what about me? I want to enjoy the cholent. Leave God out of this for a minute. Leave Shabbos out of this for a minute. I want the cholent. So, Ntivat Shalom says, right. There's a certain struggle between the me and, call it, the soul, the spiritual, the holiness. And in order to attain this level, one has to sort of put himself out of the picture.
In order to what?
You have to put yourself out of the picture a little bit. You have to say, okay, so I won't be doing what I want for now. That's why I said try it with one spoonful. Because you do it too much, you'll get very annoyed. Even if you enjoy it, it'll really tick you off. If a person's not holding there, then it's the most annoying thing in the world. I want to enjoy my steak. Leave God out of the picture, right? I haven't wrapped my teeth around the steak for who knows how long. What are you telling me to bring God into the picture? So it's very hard for a person in the beginning, for a person to do this for more than one bite. Because we have an ego. And we have a hard time putting down that ego. So he says that's why the pasuk begins and says, your seed will be like the dust on the ground. Because in order to attain this level, a person has to really nullify himself. You have to make yourself like the dust on the ground and say, okay, I want my joys, my pleasures to be focused on pleasures the way Hashem wants me to have them. And that's, if one attains that level on Shabbos, where one's Shabbos is really reflective of a holy Shabbos, then you'll expand without limits. You get a portion without limits. So you could only attain that on Shabbos. Shabbos gives us that capacity to say, okay, I'm going to focus on something else. I'm going to focus on doing things right. I want to take this to another area which is very relevant. The same is true in a relationship between a man and his wife. In the most intimate moments, a person has a choice. Is he going to think about himself or the other person? And the weakness of man, the tendency of man, is to think of himself. And the truth is that if a person can nullify himself and really be focused on giving instead of taking, then he will reach much greater heights in the relationship and even in his own joy, in his own feelings in the relationship. And this is true not only in the most intimate moments, but also in smaller things. There's a great book by Stephen Covey, who just passed away. What's the name of it? What? Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. So he wrote a bunch of good books, but that's probably the best and the first. So one of the things he writes there, and it's mind-boggling to see someone who's not Jewish came to the same conclusion. He says, we feel good about ourselves when we conquer ourselves, when we do things that go against our desires, when we could take control of our desires, when we're not running after the fleeting, passing urge that's there. We say, no, I'm going to do what's correct long-term. When we forego the immediate pleasure for the sake of a greater long-term pleasure. And that's true in every relationship. Meaning he's focusing this on our service of Hashem, on the Shabbos, etc. I'm saying the concept is not only there. It's a concept throughout life. Yeah?
Just not sure I understand fully, you know, if he's talking reward here or there. I mean, it sounds to me, you know, which is probably detrimental, like the idea in my head that, okay, Shabbos is a 60th, a taste of the world to come, and you're able to get to that place here by observing the Shabbos properly, you'll have a much more unlimited Olam Haba appreciation because you'll have built yourself to that way that you can experience it. Even if the other person is in the same place, he doesn't feel it the same way somebody who, you know, enjoys whatever, an opera, and somebody who just noise. So that's what it sounds like, but I don't think that I'm getting what he means.
Why? No, so, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So he's talking about the Olam Haba is much greater because you've mastered how to do it here. Is that...
I don't think he's saying.
The appreciation of I'm equating the taste of Olam Haba, which is, you're saying, you know, if you can experience Shabbos properly here, where you get above the physical, even indulging in physicality, that way, when you're in all spirituality and you've elevated yourself to that level, you'll be able to have unlimited appreciation of it.
So that second part, I didn't see that he said.
Okay,
I'm saying his.
I don't know if he was.
He's saying the first part. He's right. Saying that on Shabbos and the task that Yaakov accomplished was the capacity to take everything physical and uplift it.
And he's getting the reward here or there for that.
He doesn't address that. I think the simple reading is that it's both.
Okay, yeah, that's, I was trying to.
He doesn't address it. I think he means both.
So...